Chairman with you. We got another big day on the horizon here. Not only do we have LeBron and the Lakers back in town tonight, Bronny is also here, but we're starting to get you ready for this Chargers game on Sunday. And the big conversation is Jameis Winston. Kevin Stefanski says today that his plan is to start him going forward, but we're all day to day. Some good clarity there by Kevin Stefanski. And to go ahead and talk about this, the Browns' chances of making this season interesting, what the season's really about, and whatever the hell rating is, we head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome in Odyssey NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day be delicious. Ross, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nick, that was strong, man. Very strong right there with the mayo. You don't know what rating is?
I never heard. I saw it on your Twitter today. I've never. When you said, is it still a thing? I was like, I didn't even know it was a thing. Tell me more.
Okay, have you ever heard of Mischief Night?
No.
What is that?
No, that's most nights for me, though.
Okay, so like where I grew up, the night before Halloween, when you're a teenager, you kind of get dressed up like in dark clothing and you do secret ops like pranks where you toilet paper somebody's house and like the trees in their yard or shaving cream or maybe you throw eggs at their house. Like you cause a little trouble. You cause a little bit of a ruckus.
So that's tonight.
That's tonight. And usually at some point either one of the parents gets mad and comes after you, or maybe the cops chase you around, and that's like more than half the fun. Like that, I remember one time they raided our house when I was like in sixth grade because my sister was in 10th grade. So of course they came to our house, and my dad, like, he heard them throwing corn at the house because you can hear the corn like hitting the windows, and my dad got out and ran after them screaming and yelling. And he came back, and my mom was like, oh, my gosh, Jim, you got so upset. I'm surprised you got that mad. Like, she's in 10th grade now. You knew they were going to come. And he's like, no, not at all. I just remember when I did it, by far the most fun was when the guy chased after you. So it was awesome. I mean, I was to see them. So two things that are interesting to note. One year, my mom was worried about me, like, when I was in 8th or 9th grade. She was worried about me getting hit by a car. So she wanted me to wear my dad's, like, you know, like, when a runner runs early in the morning, they wear those, like, what's it called, like, fluorescent things?
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom wanted me to wear one. I'm like, Mom, I might as well just go right to the police station. What are you talking about? Like, you can't wear the thing that makes you shine bright at night. Like, what are you talking about? The worst idea I've ever heard. So anyway, then the other time, my dad worked, ironically, for a chocolate Easter bunny company called R.M. Palmer. So that's from my hometown, and my dad was like a sales and marketing guy for them. So one year probably wasn't the best idea. Took a lot of the extra chocolate, threw it at this one neighbor's house. We didn't really like him. And they called the next day and said, hey, yeah, we know it was you because it was all Palmer chocolate. And my dad was like, you got to go down there and clean it up now. So that was brutal. So they don't do that in Ohio. So you guys don't know how to have fun.
No, yeah,
but that's what you do in Pennsylvania.
I still don't think you do it in Pennsylvania. This is how people get arrested now. This is like a federal case. You can't. There's no mischief anymore. Everything's a federal crime.
You know what? I think it's a really good point. Based on the social media response, I don't think people do it anymore. Because I think now, like, they would call the cops, you'd get busted, or they would shoot you because they'd be scared. The world has just changed since the early 90s, I guess. Yeah. Early to late 90s.
Simpler times.
I mean, if that Yankees fan committed assault, then, yeah, I mean, egging somebody's house is up there, too, is a federal.
Hey, you know what? Is that what they're saying?
No, we had a conversation earlier, Ross, just about Whether or not like people are taking it to the extreme by calling it assault. That's all.
No, it's definitely not assault, but I would say this. If I was Mookie Betts, I might have assaulted those dudes. the one guy was like twisting his wrist to open up his gloves to get the ball out. The other guy's holding his hand back. I mean, that's when like I feel like once every 10 years, some fan in some sport globally needs to get punched in the face as an example to all the other fans around the world that, like, hey, you can, I know you think that you're protected. You're not. But these guys can still punch you in the face, and you better not do dumb stuff. Because that was galactically dumb by those Yankee fans last night.
I think I'm 100% on board.
It's like one shot, F around and find out type thing.
But it's one. You get one punch if you're Mookie Betts, so it's got per person. So it's got to land. So, or you can do two on one person, then just like basically save it all up, like it's some sort of like fuel perks or something. But I think you're spot on. I guarantee you.
I don't think we need to go all the way to like Malice in the Palace level.
Yeah, that's not good.
That was too much. That was too far.
I don't know that we need to knock out like double digit people. But I do think a healthy reminder every once in a while is not the worst thing for fans to realize, hey, like, these guys can actually, you can't just say or do or whatever to these people.
Yeah, really one punch in the face really does. Like, I've never needed to be punched in the face twice. It's, I mean, my own, like, learning curve. Once was enough for me, Ross.
You know what's so funny about that, Nick?
What's that?
I literally, when I was at Princeton, I told the dean of admissions that he likes sports. So he's talking about sports. I was like, I actually have an idea for you. And he's like, what? He was a cool guy. I'm like, I think every person that gets accepted to Princeton, I had two ideas for him. Number one was for him to allow me to help screen some of the female applicants. He did not think that was a good idea.
That can be problematic.
My other idea, though, was that everyone that gets accepted to Princeton, that along with that acceptance should come a punch in the face. So you, A, realize that that's actually a thing that happens in the world, and B, realize you're really not that great. Because that was one of the flaws of Princeton, is that, like, everybody's walking around like they're so – I'm like, you're really not that sweet, bro. You know what I mean? Like, I think people need a healthy reminder in life at times of that and what that feels like. By the way, I have a question for you guys.
Sure.
Why are so many people in Cleveland giving me all the credit for the Browns' win over the Ravens and saying – we wouldn't have won that game if Ross Tucker didn't call it on CBS. He's so good. That's definitely the like, it's flattering and probably true, but I'm still surprised how many people are saying it.
Are they actually saying it, or are you now encouraging them to say it by saying other people are saying it?
Sounds like something that somebody who went to Princeton who thought they were hot, you know what, would say.
Sounds like a guy who needs to get punched in the face.
No, I mean, all the text messages I've gotten from people are you're the greatest color analyst we've ever heard, and there's no way we win that game if you weren't in the booth.
All right, that was just me.
I heard Jameis after the game saying that the theme in the locker room was win one for the Tucker.
That was good.
I'll have to follow up on that one. Ross Tucker, and Odyssey NFL Insider Calls, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. They won against Baltimore. It was fun. There's a conversation in town. Should the Browns continue to try and win, even if it takes them farther away from being able to draft a quarterback this year? I'll ask you, should the Browns continue to try and win this year?
Yes, they should. Absolutely. Because now that they have a quarterback playing the way he did, now they know what it's like. They have hope. Listen, you guys, I told you this before, the Browns might be the best fan base in the entire NFL. The loyalty and passion that Browns fans have for a team that has done so little since 99, and by the way, left them, obviously, as we know. I am always so impressed. That place, guys, they hadn't won a home game yet this year. I mean, the team has been a disaster and very disappointing this year. That place was rocking on Sunday. When Jameis threw that touchdown to Tillman, the place absolutely went berserk. And I am so happy for those people. I'm so happy for everyone listening. Listen, like what do people want to do, okay? They want to see their team, the Browns, win the games on Sunday and beat rivals and beat the Steelers and beat whoever. And the joy that those people experienced, I mean, I would love to hear. It was awesome to experience and to be part of. And I want those people to have more joy this year. I want them to win more. Listen, you don't know which one of the quarterbacks is going to be good anyway. I mean, Bo Nix and the Broncos are 5-3. Nobody wanted him. And he was what, the fifth quarterback that went? They had the top three guys. Penix was 8. The Vikings traded up to get J.J. McCarthy at 11. I don't know when Bo Nix would have been drafted if the Broncos didn't take him. And now they're 5-3, and he's starting every game. I don't know if Bo Nix is great or not. But my point is out of these guys that are coming out this year, whoever it is, Shador and Cam Ward, you don't know which one's really going to be the best. To lose games with the hope that you get the best. Look, I think Jaden Daniels is better than Caleb Williams, and I think he's going to be. So do you want to have the number one pick and maybe take the wrong guy like Carolina and Chicago did? Or would you rather have the number two pick and maybe get the better guy? The point is I am not a believer in losing games. Losing sucks. Losing is miserable. We don't want to be miserable. We want to enjoy our Sundays. We want the Browns to be competitive, to win games, and at least feel like they're in this thing until December. And maybe later, I don't know, maybe they go on a run here. Although I still kind of think there's so much noise around Za'Darius Smith that I tend to think they probably trade him, which, you know, hurts those chances a little bit.
Well, along those lines, Ross, does the math change on them maybe trying to go for it a little bit more if they lose on Sunday? Because as you mentioned, the trade deadline obviously looms large next Tuesday. And if you fall to 2-7, maybe now you're reevaluating things. Or is there a way they thread the needle and they say, we can trade some guys while still trying to be competitive the rest of the season?
Yeah, I think it's a really fair question. I think if they lose if they win Sunday, then they would be what, 3-6?
Yeah, they'd be 3-6, yeah.
So it's still probably a long shot, but makes it a little bit of a tougher sell in the locker room if they've won back-to-back games, because it's so funny. No matter what your record is in the NFL, you start to win a couple games in a row, you start to really believe, right? If they lose, I think it's much more reasonable and much more likely that they trade somebody. Maybe two guys. I don't know. I mean, but much more likely. If they win, I think that's a little bit of a tougher sell. Although, I think you could argue, hey, we traded Cooper, and we've still won a couple games since then. So, let's trade Za'Darius, and, you know, Okoronkwo can go out and play as well as Za'Darius, and we've got these other guys, Alex Wright and whoever, can get pressure. So, I'm sure they can spin it either way. But I do think for a lot of teams around the NFL, this game's kind of important. You know, this weekend's important. It's like the Rams are going to trade Cooper Kupp, and they won. They're like, okay, yeah, forget about that. Yeah, forget. We're going to go for it, actually, now.
Ross, do you buy into Jameis as a more than the next, I don't know, 9 games starter for the Browns?
Probably not. No, I mean, I think... I think Jameis is in the Flacco stage of his career, probably, where it's like nobody really wants to make him the man at the start of the season, but he can become the man. Now, we talked to him about this. Like I said, hey, man, like this could be the start of the rest of your life. Like, you could be Geno Smith or you could be Darnold. And I thought it was interesting. He's like, you're forgetting the big one. And I said, who? He's like, Steve Young. That's who Jameis brought up when I brought up, you know, maybe this is his opportunity to resurrect his career as a starter. He threw the ball right to the Ravens several times. Like, I can't believe Eddie Jackson dropped that one in the end zone. I really can't believe Kyle Hamilton dropped that one. I tend to think that Jameis is probably who he's always been, which is, number one, hilarious, and then, number two, just very aggressive, both positively and negatively. I mean, he said, my mindset, he told me on Friday, my mindset is to attack the defense, and it's very entertaining for a broadcaster and for fans, but I would imagine over the rest of this season, it probably evens out a little bit more in terms of touchdowns, interceptions, and same with the record for the Browns, right? They probably end up more like 500 in his starts for the rest of the year, and I don't think that's going to be enough for the Browns to think, okay, let's run it back with Jameis next year. In fact, I would imagine after a couple bad games, if that happens, that they would start DTR to try to have a better idea of what they have in DTR by the end of the year, so they know, is DTR a starter? Probably not, but they can find that out. Is he a number two? I mean, I think they got on some level find out if DTR is even a real number two in the NFL.
Ross, final thing here. We saw the change at left tackle with Jet Wills dealing with some injuries. What did you think of DeJuan Jones' debut on the left side of the offensive line?
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised. I thought he was going to have major issues with Van Noy. You know, he'd only ever started one game at left tackle at Ohio State. Had never played left tackle with the Browns. I thought that might get ugly for the Browns. It didn't at all. I wouldn't put Wills back in there. The last year of Wills' contract, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put Wills back in there. To me, DeJuan would be the left tackle unless he really, really struggles. I've seen enough of Wills. I mean, Wills has been consistently inconsistent. It feels like he's been consistently unavailable, you know, or in and out of the lineups. Just kind of like I said about Jameis, I'd leave Jameis in at quarterback until he really struggles. I'd leave DeJuan at left tackle, keep Conklin at right tackle, unless DeJuan starts to really struggle. I don't see the point in putting Wills back in there.
Ross, it's always great to catch up with you. Good luck with the rating. Good luck. Enjoy Halloween. And, you know, make sure you get that dad tax going, okay?
Thanks, Ross.
Yeah, oh, no question. I'm all over it. Thank you, guys. See you, dudes.
Later, dude. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline will react to what he had to say about where the Browns are next on 92.3 The Fan. Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL Insider, joins us every hump day at 4 o'clock. And one, that was wildly close to flat-out pandering by Ross. Like, how many times can a man, like, I made fun of Peterlin and called him Panda Peterlin yesterday for what I thought was, on the fringes, the auspices of pandering. That's full-blown pandering from Ross there, because I think he doesn't want to be the bad guy. I don't know. Like, I usually believe, 100% of what Ross says. Yes, winning is fun. That's not the conversation. What is the right direction for the Browns? And I even, even the people who are like, well, you got to thread the needle, right? All right, because I think, are you team thread the needle?
Well, that was, I am team, like if I was in Dan Jubari's shoes, and I understand it's different when you're actually in that building and you have to think about like the locker room and not losing guys, but I am team like whatever you need to do to start planning ahead for next year and accumulate picks. With the exception of what we've talked about before on the show, I'm not trading Myles Garrett. Like, there's certain people I'm not trading. But yeah, like I'm team, like if there's a guy in a one-year deal or a guy that you're not going to re-sign, like a Greg Newsome potentially, or Za'Darius Smith or whatever, make the moves you have to make, because I understand, like, yeah, the idea of hope is fun, but you're probably not digging yourself out of this hole. But I have also thrown out, like we talked about today, the idea of like maybe they actually would try to thread the needle and like still make some trades while keeping somebody like Jameis around to give off the idea that they're trying to be competitive.
Yeah, it's funny. Like I've heard this. That's a fire sale.
Fire sale is like Miles. And that to me is stupid.
Well, no, if you trade Miles, you're tanking. Like, not just this year.
So we're trying to figure out the stages here. So there's threading the needle, which is like you trade some pieces, but you still try to be competitive and win. Then there's fire sale, which is the next level
which means
you just trade everybody.
Which meaning you're trading guys who aren't going to be here next year, okay. But you're doing it without any thought to how is this going to impact us winning or losing.
And then tanking, full-fledged tanking is below that, and it's like
a full teardown.
Yeah, I'm glad we had in like 2016, 17.
Those are the stages of suck there.
I'm glad we established that,
But I do think, because here's the thing. I think we oversimplify all the time the idea of keeping the locker room, right? Making decisions that might be in the best interest of next year sometimes come in the form of shutting guys down who are playing injured. Like the Miles thing. Like, you're not going to shut down Miles if you think you have a credible chance of winning every week. But at some point, if you go to 7-10 and Miles gets a serious injury that impacts his next year, it's your ass. Yeah. Like, that's bad. You're clearly not good at risk assessment. But even like, I'll be where the Browns are is like, Sunday's going to go a long way for this. And this is a real conversation. But after Sunday, if you lose, the question's answered. The deadline's here. Unload every asset you can get some modicum of a decent draft pick for. And that probably includes Jameis. Yeah. If somebody comes along and says, we'll give you a fifth for Jameis, well, that's not worth it. But if it's a fourth or if it's a third, like, it's a real conversation. And I'll be honest with you. Browns fans getting mad at that, totally get. You should be mad at the first 7 weeks of the season where they clearly, like, that's what wrote the course that you're going on here. And so for anyone saying, and this is more to the media, anyone saying, well, you just got to pause here. I just want to pause. Can I hold my answer? No, you don't have to. Like, there's not a whole lot of difference between 2-7 and 3-6. Like, you are, because you have to factor in, it's a gauntlet. Like, it's not even just daunting anymore. Sometimes you get halfway into the season, you're like, well, those final five games don't really look that tough. The Steelers look like Super Bowl contenders. That's not changing, right? Like, the Chiefs are undefeated, and they still haven't played their best football because they don't do that until after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly even think the Bengals have some good football in them
on their best day and Joe Burrow's playing well. They're a tough team.
So, like,
no matter what their record is.
I felt like this week has been just Nick Wilson's the bad guy. But, like, I can't sell you sugar and tell you it's vegetables. Like, I can't lie to you. And it's gross how some people, especially on the station, they just want to lie to you because they don't want you to get mad at them. Yeah. Like, the reality is, it's not pretty. This is where the Browns are. The Browns charted this course. And to try and half-ass it now by going, well, let's get to 8-9. That's not a win. That's not a silver lining. Yeah.
That's not like some badge of honor to be excited about at the end of the season. It doesn't accomplish either goal, which is the two outcomes here that you're hoping for are either you win a bunch of games and you actually make the playoffs, and then we can all be excited about the fact that they pulled out this miraculous feat and came back, or you think about draft pick assessment and where you're at and try to stockpile as many picks as you can because you're in the mode of, how do we turn this thing around next year, especially with this Deshaun contract still kind of hanging over our heads? So, yeah, if you're not going to accomplish one of those, then you made the wrong choice in the end. I think that's very, very true. And that's why I think this game on Sunday is so massively important, because if you win, yeah, sure, you can talk me into the idea of, like, let's give this thing a whirl and see what we can do. And maybe that's what leads to them maybe trying to thread the needle, the term that we tossed around. But if they lose on Sunday, I think it closes the book on all that. You just got to be like, all right, whatever we need to do to get picks is what we need to do.
I think if you're putting it on Sunday, it's a cop-out. Show leadership. Show direction. Even if the fans aren't going to love the direction now, it is leadership. LeBron's back in town. Dave McMenamin joins us next. We'll talk about LeBron. Is this the final game in Cleveland? Bronny, is it the first game in Cleveland? All that and more with Dave next on 92.3 The Fan. If we've got LeBron back in town, Bronny's back in town, although I don't know Bronny necessarily cares Northeast Ohio. Yeah, I think it's part of the reason of moving to L.A. here. That might not be fair. Listen, the point is, we could see LeBron today. We could see Bronny for the first time.
Video. Bunch of highlights Bronny? Of him. Yeah, a bunch of highlights of him, like, watching Dad on the court back in the day and running around, and they held him up. And
aren't you anti-tribute video for almost anything?
I'm just asking if he qualifies.
Then I'm team tribute video.
I'm just asking if he qualifies.
For
all.
Bronny James, that's where I'm at. And maybe throw in, like, a small one for LeBron there, because it's been a minute since the last one. But to talk about,
like, last year?
Yeah, I know. That's been a full year almost. Have some respect. But to talk about this all, we head out to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. LeBron and Bronny and the Jameses weren't the only people we lost to L.A. several years ago. We lost this man as well. We have him back now, Dave McMenamin of ESPN. Dave, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, guys, and I always enjoy coming back to Cleveland.
Well, that's what people say when they get to leave. I'm kidding.
I was going to say, that sounds, I mean, I don't know about
fairness, in fairness, not only did he get the nicer weather, he's also gotten married. Like, this man, you're living the life, Dave McMenamin. I mean, you're not putting one past me, fella.
Hey, guys, it's been 6 years, you know, since I spent 4 years in Cleveland. So it's been a while, but it feels like yesterday. Actually, I was looking up an old quote of LeBron's from his first stint, game from the second stint with the Cavs. And it came to my attention. Today is 10 years to the day from LeBron restarting his time with the Cavs. Wow. That season opener against the Knicks.
That is, you're slowly killing me, McMenamin. I mean, this is like, I have three kids who are daily reminders that I am aging at a just ridiculous pace, and that kicked it into overdrive. I do want to know, though, because I think every time LeBron comes back, there is a chorus of people wondering, could this be his last ride in Cleveland? How much of a chance do you think that this is LeBron's final game in front of these Cleveland fans in Cleveland?
I mean, we shouldn't rule out the possibility, because obviously when you're in a fight against Father Time, sometimes things are out of your control, and I'm not going to say more than that, you know, but someone can knock on wood, even suggesting the thought, but I don't believe it will be his last. I think if LeBron has everything go his way, he's playing at least one more season, if not more, as we see how Bryce, his second son, matriculates in his senior year of high school coming up, followed by whatever he does in his post-high school year, whether it be college ball, whether it be, you know, semi-pro, whatever, before you'd be eligible to be an NBA player. But I mean, listen, even if he does play next year, or even if he plays two more years, like, unless we're talking about the Lakers and Cavs in the NBA Finals, there's like one, two, or three more games LeBron ever plays in Cleveland. So it's a big deal. And, you know, he was feeling a little under the weather over the weekend, didn't play all that well in Phoenix the other night. He decided to stay back and not join the team at shoot-around, I'm told, basically just to power up so he can have more energy to put on the show tonight.
Dave, along those lines, I've just kind of always been under the impression that when LeBron is going to call it quits, and if it's going to be his last game in Cleveland, like, he's going to let us know. Like, that seems like the type of person he would be in terms of making, you know, doing the retirement tour type thing. Do you subscribe to that same belief that he's going to make that clear and it's not going to be this mystery when he comes back to Cleveland?
Yes, I think that'll be the case. But that's why I just led into it with, if it's his plan, right? Sometimes plans are taken out of your hands. But, yeah, I certainly believe that we'll have all the pomp and circumstance of a retirement tour whenever that comes, right? And, like, hey, Kobe's last season, he didn't announce till about a third of the way into the year. So, you know, and then obviously there was a retirement tour that continued till the end of the regular season with Kobe. So, I mean, he could announce midstream, right, versus announcing before day one of the regular season. That said, I don't think this is going to be his last year in the NBA.
All right, so with that, it's Bronny's first game in the NBA. We saw him game one for, I believe, two whole minutes. It's Cleveland. You think we're going to see the kid tonight?
I think so, right? I'm told that Bronny has no expectation of playing if his number's called upon. He's going to be ready, and he's been mentally preparing himself for this moment. And, you know, something he looks forward to. Obviously, he has all those memories of going up and play in the Cavs auxiliary gym up in the attic of the queue while the Cavs were playing the real game, and Bronny going up against Richard Jefferson's kids and other Cavs players' kids having their own game while the Cavs were playing playoff games and NBA Finals games. I think the big kind of clue here is Bronny, I reported with Sham Shanaria last week, he's going to be playing for the Lakers G League team when that season starts at the end of this road trip on November 7th. There are other young players on the Lakers, Jalen Hood-Schifino, Maxwell Lewis, who are also going to be playing on the G League team. They are not on this road trip. They're back in L.A. prepping for the G League season. Bronny's on this road trip. Why bring him if you're not going to play him? I'm not saying it'd be a ton of time, but play him some spot minutes tonight with LeBron in Cleveland.
Dave McMenamin joining us on the show. It's obviously been a while, Dave, since you watched this team more regularly and covered them on a daily basis. But as you sort of survey this current state of the Cavaliers and the Eastern Conference and the NBA at large, what do you think is a realistic expectation that fans should have for this Cavs team in 2024-25?
I think it's a realistic view of this group that they could be the third best team in the East, get the number three seed. Behind, I think Boston's to be the runaway, and the Knicks, I would put them above them. But the way the Sixers have started their year, just a complete mess, and Milwaukee certainly doesn't look like they've figured things out under Doc Rivers yet. And then, you know, the Pacers, I know they made the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago, that they, you know, they have a nice team, but I would put the Cavs stacked above them regardless, even if they didn't have this 4-0 start. So I think that should be a realistic goal for them. And, you know, the beauty of your, if you get the three seed, you know, you can avoid playing the Boston Celtics in the second round if you get through your first round opponent, you know, and maybe not have to play the Celtics until the conference finals. The Cavs team, they have, you know, arguably the second best starting five in basketball after the Celtics. And when you have guys like, you know, Ty Jerome all of a sudden putting up 10 points on 62% shooting, two steals and three assists off the bench, adding to the likes of, you know, guys like Max Strus and other high-level role players this team had already developed last year, there's a lot to like there. And Kenny Atkinson seems to have, you know, the ear of this group. I think they're only going to get better as the year goes on, quite frankly.
Dave McMenamin of ESPN on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, you know, from the LeBron perspective, the Lakers start 3-1. There is the first-round pick who had a really great couple moments here. I know Austin Reeves is coming back. Obviously, it looks like this team is pretty healthy here. What are realistic expectations for that team, even with LeBron, AD, and maybe an improved roster in a loaded West?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you got to start with LeBron and AD. If they can give you the 70-plus games that they did last year, now you have a starting point where you can talk about this team making some noise in the West. And you're going to need then the continued attention to detail that they've shown under J.J. Redick. You know, very little slippage. You know, they can shoot 5-for-32 from three in game one against the Wolves, but they're still exerting the defensive effort that JJ's asking them to do and not letting the disappointment of missing shots seep into their play on the other end. You're going to need the continued development of Dalton Connect. Obviously, Austin Reeves has looked like a borderline all-star to begin this year. Hopefully, you find a bit of a rhythm that D'Angelo Russell showed in the second half of last year. Rui Hachimura has been incredible to start the year thus far. And then you hope that the nights when Anthony Davis gets in foul trouble, because it's going to happen, or if he has to miss time because of injury, Jackson Hayes is a good enough option at their backup center. I think that's kind of their weakest position right now when you look at their roster. Is, you know, Jackson Hayes is a rim-running big with great athleticism, but not the best hands or the best sense and feel of the game. That's a position, quite frankly, they got to upgrade in. I know they have Christian Wood coming back from an injury, but you can't rely on him either, in my estimation. And so Rob Pelinka has his work cut out for them to get the roster better for them to be able to make the next level. And then I think a guy that you look at as being a swing piece for them, should they get into the playoffs and be facing one of these teams that have an elite wing player as their primary option, whether it be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with OKC, whether it be Luka Doncic, Anthony Edwards right on down the list in the Western Conference, is Jared Vanderbilt. Can he be the disruptive defensive force that he was en route to the Lakers making the Western Conference Finals that first year when they acquired him? Or will these foot injuries that basically sabotaged his year last year continue to linger into this year? But the West is so packed tight, and I'd say basically from, you know, I think you put OKC and Minnesota as the class of the conference, and then you're going 3 through 10, basically, where it's a coin flip to me. And so that means, hey, if the Lakers have things line up for them, they could be that third seed, but I can see them back in the play-in tournament again.
Dave, a lot was said over the summer about the Lakers choosing to hire J.J. Redick as their next head coach, both good and bad. What have the early returns been for the Lakers' new head coach?
It was unconventional, right? And you go from J.J. having 8 podcast episodes with LeBron James to being one of the initial, like, 3 candidates that they interview for the job. Yeah, it seems strange on its face. But yeah, I've known J.J. for a while, but I covered him as a player. We overlapped at ESPN, obviously. I can't say I knew him all that well, though. Like, we just would talk here and there in scrums or whatever, being at a game. Being around him day-to-day, he's so committed to everything that basketball brings, whether it being X's and O's guys, whether that being putting in the extra time. Like, he's so meticulous, where he basically has like a Excel spreadsheet where he makes sure that he communicates with every single player on the Lakers roster on a daily basis, one-on-one. So he doesn't start to have division in the locker room. So he doesn't start to have resentment or lose a guy if they're not playing, right? Because it's a long season. He's got to keep people like Cam Reddish and Christian Wood, et cetera, engaged for the times when other guys are resting or other guys are hurt, and you're going to need them to play, and keeping them mentally stimulated is a part of his plan, and you see it. And then you see the care factor. I mean, he looked like he was staring lasers into my forehead when I was talking to him post-game in Phoenix about what happened when they blew an 18-point lead. It wasn't because he was mad at my question. He was mad at himself that he was not able to get his group to execute well enough to win a game and be 4-0. So I think, you know, when you're talking about a team like the Lakers, their built-in advantage back in the day was they had deeper pockets in ownership. Jerry Buss was willing to pay the 1-to-1 penalty tax, and they have the beautiful location of Southern California. Well, they still got beautiful Southern California, but the Lakers, with the new CBA, they don't have any advantage over other teams when it comes to paying their talent, and quite frankly, they have much more shallow pockets than a lot of the ownership groups out there, including Dan Gilbert of the Cavs. They're not billionaires. You know, their family are millionaires, that their main business is the mom and pop shop of the Lakers. So how do you create an advantage there? You get a cutting edge coach who understands what it is to be a modern NBA player, who has interviewed every NBA superstar and budding superstar over the last 4 years and has relationships with them. So when it comes to time them being free agents down the line, he already has established some sort of rapport that he can use when the Lakers need to recruit these guys. It was a smart play. And I think it's going to work out with J.J. Redick.
Dave, I think it's working out for you, buddy. You're great, as always. Glad to have you back in town, even more so than Bronny, I'll be honest.
Well, that means a lot, fellas. But yeah, hopefully Bronny gets a great moment tonight. I'll tell you this: like, he's got a long way to go as a basketball player. For a 20-year-old kid, he's dynamite. He has no sense of pretentiousness, no sense of was born on third and thought he hit a triple. He works hard. He treats people the right way. So he's someone that I think NBA fans will root for.
We love to hear that, Dave. Be good, buddy.
Thanks,
appreciate
Dave.
You.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Dave McMenamin there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. When we come back, it's time for the 5 at 5 on 92.3 The Fan.